जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज आचार्य अष्टरशत श्री श्रीमद् शील प्रभुवारी ग्रंथराजावचम की गौर प्रणंदी अगौर सिद्धि सुंदवरी अगौर श्री श्री गुरु गौरंग श्री गुरु गौरंग। ओ भगनान तमिरांदस्य ननंजना शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायं ददाति स्वापदन्तिकं वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम सिक्स्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 3 टेक्स्ट 22। एतावानेव लोकेस्मिन् पुंसं धर्मपरस्मृताः भक्तियोगो भगवति तन्नाम ग्रहणादिभिः। हरे कृष्ण। एतावानेव लोकेस्मिन् पुंसं धर्मपरस्मृताः भक्तियोगो भगवति तन्नाम ग्रहणादिभिः। एतावानेव लोकेस्मिन् पुंसं धर्मपरस्मृताः भक्तियोगो भगवति नाम ग्रहणादिभिः। मदर एतावानेव लोकेस्मिन् पुंसं धर्मपरस्मृताः भक्तियोगो भगवति तन्नाम ग्रहणादिभिः। एतावान् this much eva indeed Loke asmin, in this material world, pum sam, are the living entities, dharma, the religious principles, para, transcendental, smrita, recognized, bhakti yoga or devotional service, bhagavati, to the supreme personality of Godhead, not to the demigods. Tat, his nama, of the holy name, grahana adibihi, beginning with chanting. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for a living entity in human society. Purport. As stated in the previous verse, Dharman Bhagavatam, real religious principles are Bhagavad Dharma, the principles described in Srimad Bhagavatam itself or in Bhagavad Gita, the plenary study of the Bhagavatam. What are these principles? The Bhagavatam says, Dharma Prujita Kaitavatra. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there are no cheating religious systems. Everything in the Bhagavatam is directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavatam further says, Savai Pum Samparo Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radokshaje. The Supreme Religion is that which teaches its followers how to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the reach of experimental knowledge. Such a religious system begins with Tan Nama Grahana, chanting of the holy name of the Lord, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Parasevanam. After chanting the holy name of the Lord and dancing in ecstasy, one gradually sees the form of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, and the transcendental qualities of the Lord. This way, one fully understands the situation of the personality of Godhead. One can come to this understanding of the Lord, how he descends into the material world, how he takes his birth, and what activities he performs. But one can know this only by executing devotional service, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktiya Mama Bijanati. Simply by devotional service, one can understand everything about the Supreme Lord. If one fortunately understands the Supreme Lord in this way, the result is Chaktwa Deham Punar Janma Naiti. After giving up his material body, he no longer has to take birth in this material world. Instead, he returns home back to Godhead, that is the ultimate perfection. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse 15, Mamu Petra Punar Janma Dukhalayam Ashashvatam Nabnuvanti Mahatmanah Sabam Siddhim Paramam Gataha. Quote, after attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries because they have attained the highest perfection. And Koshu the Prabhupada Jai. So yesterday we had mentioned how Yamaraj had glorified how the Vishnu Dutas always give protection to Vaishnavas. So then question came, then why are they protecting Ajamil? He is not a Vaishnava. He is not, they're favoring a Dharma by giving protection to Ajamil. So then Yamaraj said, well, you know about Dharma, you in the mode of ignorance. Even persons who are highly in the mode of goodness can understand what is real Dharma. Real Dharma is called as Bhagavad Dharma. And only persons who know that Bhagavad Dharma are the great personalities, the Mahajans, 12 of them. 4 of them are renunciates, 8 of them householders. So only we, those 12, they're knowing those great principles. Otherwise, they are confidential, guhyam. You cannot find them so easily in the scriptures dealing with the gunas. They are vishuddham, transcendental, and they're durbodham. They're very hard to understand. Okay, fine. So then we're asking you, what are those principles? You're saying Bhagavad Dharma. What is that Bhagavad Dharma? So then this section describing. What is that Bhagavad Dharma? The Bhagavad Dharma is Bhakti Yoga Bhagavati. That's what it said. Bhakti Yoga, devotion to the Supreme Lord. That is the Bhagavad Dharma. Surrender to God, trying to love God. Shmitaha. This is Pumsam Dharma Parashmita. This is the Paradharma, the supreme most Dharma, topmost Dharma. Shmitaha, for human beings. Pumsam means for human beings in this world, Lokesman. For human beings in this world, this Dharma, Bhakti Yoga, to Bhagavan, Bhagavati, is the topmost Dharma. Shmitaha, this is recognized. Recognized by who? It says Shmita means recognized. Recognized by who? By the Mahajans, they recognize. So this is the topmost Dharma for human society, devotional service to Bhagavan, Tanama Grahanadibihi, beginning with the chanting of the holy names of Bhagavan. This is topmost Dharma. This is Bhagavad Dharma. And so those principles are described in the Shastras that are free from cheating. Dharma Projita Kaitavotra. There are two types of cheating. Desire for bhukti, desire for mukti. Two types of cheating. One approaches God for the desire for bhukti, material enjoyment, or someone approaches God because they want liberation from the consequences of their program for their attempts at material enjoyment. Understand? You try to enjoy, you think it's a good idea, then you suffer the reactions of trying to enjoy, then you want freedom from that. And so you approach the Supreme Lord for these reasons. Both are types of cheating. It's not pure. Real dharma means that by which one tries to develop love for God. Savaipum samparo dharma eto bhaktira dukshaje. That is a real religious principle. Although Krishna does identify such persons who approach him for ulterior motives as being broad-minded in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, udhara sarva evaite. They are broad-minded. Why are they broad-minded? What is your answer? No, because they come to me. They're broad-minded because they come to me. Krishna's not narcissistic, of course. He's compassionate. Because they have come to me, they're broad-minded. And also, I have desire to benefit them also. And by coming to me, they're giving me a chance to benefit them. So the translation is actually, they're magnanimous souls. So they're magnanimous because they're giving Krishna opportunity to benefit them. Krishna is himself broad-minded by saying that. He shows his own broad-mindedness. But he says, but Gani taught my Vamevatam, but that Gani is my very self. The Gani, this Gani is a Bhagavad Gani, one who wants knowledge of Bhagavan. Krishna says, that person is my very self. He had already identified him in the previous verse as being the best of the four who approached him for ulterior motives. And then he says, this Gani is actually dear to me, I am dear to him, and he is my very self, my very soul. Of course, those who have supreme devotion to Krishna, Krishna says to Uddhava, he's more than my very soul. But those who have Gan Mishra Bhakti, Bhakti mixed with Krishna's opulence and so on, he says that soul is he is my very soul. Anyway, my point is that there is some provision for approaching God for ulterior motives, but that's not pure bhakti. Real bhakti yoga bhagavati means approaching the Supreme Lord without any ulterior motives. No desires for bhakti, no desires for mukti, just desire to render service to the Supreme Lord. Then that type of religious principle is topmost, the supreme dharma for the living entity. And its expression, according to this verse, that expresses itself by chanting the holy name of Krishna. Simply chanting Krishna's glories, that's how it manifests itself. When a person's approach is just for loving God, then their expression of their love is simply chanting Krishna's glories. That itself is the means and is also the end. When you study chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, you find that Krishna juxtaposes different types of conception of himself next to each other. Juxtapose means place next to in order to contrast, make distinction between. So he puts the atheistic perspective of him next to those who have a Gani perspective of him, next to the devotees, next to those who worship demigods, which is also worship of him indirectly. He places all these different conceptions of himself right next to each other. Chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. And he speaks about the results of these different conceptions. The results, the worship that comes from those different conceptions, or the lack thereof, and the results that particular form of worship, or lack thereof, leads to. So for example, he said, avajan nanti ma mudha manusham tanumashritam, that there are those who deride me when I come as a human being. They don't accept me as the source of all existence. So what is their result? What does Krishna say? Anyone know? Bhagavad Gita? What is their result? Those who deride me when I descend as human being, param bhava majananto, they do not know my transcendental nature of all that is, then what is their result? Anyone could have guessed that. Continuing the cycle of birth and death. Yes, mogasya mogakaramana mogadana vichetasa. Krishna says that all their hopes will be finished. All their fruit of activities, those will be finished. All their gan, that will be finished. Rakshasham usurim chaiva, they'll become rakshashas and asuras. You know what rakshasha means? A man-eater. Not anunnaki, huh? Rakshasha means someone in the mode of ignorance. And asura means someone in the mode of passion. Rakshashuram Surim Chaiva, Pakritam Mohinam Shrita, completely bewildered by Maya, my Pakriti. So that's the result of those who deride Krishna. Then next, after that, Krishna speaks of the devotees. Mahatmanasumam Partha, Daivam Pakritam Ashrita. Then, what is a devotee? Who is a devotee? He's a Mahatma. And he is under the shelter of the Daivi Pakriti, divine energy. So what is his position? Bhajanti Ananya Manaso. His mind is always just thinking of me. Then Krishna mentions his activities in the next verse. Satatam Kirtanyan Tomam, Yatantash Chadra Devrataha, Namashantash Mama. You know this verse? He's always chanting my glories, and he's always endeavoring for me, performing vratas in order to attain me. Then Krishna says, Nitya Yukta Upasate. This is what he's always doing. Nitya Yukta Upasate. He doesn't speak so much of a reaction or result. He just says, this is what he's always doing. So that's when he describes his bhakti. So for those who have no devotion for him, then Krishna says that they become hopeless and demons, rakshasim, asuram, chaiva, rascals. That is for those who don't worship him, they deride him. Then for those who are devotees, he said they're always doing like this, satatam kirtanatama. He doesn't mention any result per se. Then he mentions about those who have a kind of provisional pantheistic idea of him, or they think themselves one with Krishna, or they think Krishna as the universe. They know that the universe is not exactly Krishna, but they see that this universe is a manifestation of Krishna. This is their particular conception of Krishna. From their conception, they do Ganmarg, and they get liberation. Ganmarg means what bhakti is there. And they get liberation. And then he mentions about those who worship the devatas. Yeah, chapter 9. He mentions those who worship the devatas, and he says that they are also worshiping me only, but they do so in the wrong way. And on account of their lack of proper understanding of me as the source of these devatas, then they continue in the cycle of birth and death. So you see, Krishna's put all these different conceptions of himself next to each other, and he's shown that different results for each of the conceptions. But for the devotee, he doesn't actually mention a particular result. He just says they're always doing like this. Satatam kirtanyanto mam yatantash chadra devrataha. They're always just glorifying me, endeavoring for me in the association of devotees. Yatantash means like this. Dridavrataha, performing great vows in order to get me. Nitya yukta upasate. This is what they're always doing. He doesn't mention any actual goal, because that is the self, the process, and the goal. So there is no goal. Real bhakti yoga bhagavati, devotion for Bhagavan, expresses itself just as glorifying Krishna always, tanama grahanabdibig, beginning with chanting his name and his glories. That is all devotion, real devotion is all about. It doesn't seek anything from Krishna. Doesn't seek liberation, doesn't seek bhukti, doesn't seek comfortable environment. It just seeks the pleasure of Krishna. So he's always just doing like that only. This is called non-cheating, non-duplicitous devotional service. You just approach Krishna just out of love, which expresses itself as chanting his name, glories, qualities, etc. And Prabhupada says here in the purport, when a person does that, then Krishna benedicts him by giving him information of his, not information, darshan, of his form, his qualities, his activities. And then the devotee joins Krishna in those particular activities. Samsadim paramam gataha. So then, Yamaraj is saying, this is Bhagavad Dharma. This is a supreme religious principle. That by which you just try to love Krishna. And how do you express love for Krishna? You just talk about Krishna. Simple. Chant his glories. What is difficulty? Sing about him. Dance for him. There's no difficulty. Not because you want anything, but because that pleases Krishna. That's Supremo's Dharma. So he says this to the Yamadutas. Any questions about this? Any point? Yeah, I just mentioned like that. Yeah, the question is, Krishna is only attracted by bhakti. Samaham sarvabhuteshu namadesho sinapriya. This verse I mentioned many times. Towards the material existence, Krishna is neutral. Samoham sarvabhuteshu. He doesn't favor anyone. He doesn't, he's not against anyone. And the only reason we see inequity in the material world is because of the living entity's karmas. But it has nothing to do with Krishna's hatred for them or partiality towards one and against another. He's equal. But, Yebajanti too, but if they have bhakti for me, then I am partial towards those individuals. Now the persons who approach Krishna, the four types of individuals who approach Krishna for something other than loving Krishna, then do they not have any bhakti? How is he saying that they're magnanimous by giving me opportunity to benefit them? The point is that they do have bhakti, but it's not mixed bhakti. As we've been hearing from Ajamil's pastime, even a mixed bhakti, even a little bit of bhakti in the form of an assemblance of it, an abbas feature, can attract the attention of the Lord, especially when one chants the holy name of Krishna. Then, so these personalities of four types, they're not that they're non-devotees, they're mixed devotees. So the example given for each of these categories, for example, the distressed, who is the example given? Gajendra. For the wanting some material acquisition, example given is Dhruva. And then the inquisitive, the sages of Naimisharanya given, I think. And for the Gyanis, the Kumaras are given. So it's not that they're non-devotees, their devotion is mixed. But devotion is there, so it attracts Krishna's attention. Otherwise, there would be no hope for any of us. In fact, we chant a little bit of Hare Krishna, and we attract the attention of the Lord. So they're not non-devotees, they're mixed devotees. There is hope for everyone. Krishna is very broad-minded. Any other questions, clarifications, points?
The desire for liberation, like wanting to be free of material suffering or difficult situation in the material world, does that just go away naturally as one keeps chanting, or is there anything else we could do to help?
Yeah, it goes away as you develop love for Krishna. And so that's what our process is. When you love someone, you're unconcerned about the difficulties involved in loving them. This mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 8. You all have computers. Go to 2nd Canto, Chapter 8, verse number 6, I think. It's verse number 6. It's a very beautiful verse. The comparison is given there. Anyone picked it up yet? Yeah, read the translation. You have to read it loud. You're a little too gentle.
A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service.
Hold on. So you got that point? Did you get that? None of you heard that. Say it again.
A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service.
Okay.
Never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey.
He never relinquishes the lotus feet of the Lord because they fully satisfy him, like a traveler.
Satisfied at home after a troubled journey.
Who's satisfied at home after a troubled journey? So Prabhupada gives in the purport, when a traveler goes on a trip, so much trouble he experiences for the love of the family. So much trouble he's experiencing going far places and austerities. But when he comes home, Prabhupada says in the purport, when he comes home, not only was the journey worth it, but he also forgets all the troubles that he underwent when he sees the family, or he remembers why he's doing what he's doing. Prabhupada discusses it. So even while he's on the trip, he's undergoing so much austerity, so much suffering. And when he remembers why he is doing that, then all of that so-called suffering immediately vanishes. What to speak of when he actually sees him face to face. So in a similar way, for one whose heart has been fully purified by pure devotional service, they become pure devotee. Then out of love, what is the difficulty for them? No difficulty at all. Or if you want to say it's a difficulty whatsoever, it's a burden of love. They have this expression. We have this expression in the material world, burden of love. So if you have to carry a 50-pound bag of potatoes, we suffer tremendously, isn't it? Bhagavad comes and, you know, Kali Yuga bodies, you struggle tremendously 50-pound bag of potatoes. But if you have to carry your 50-pound baby, then everyone's this very wonderful experience, you know, and then you're showing him around to everyone and so on. So if there is any burden, then they call it burden of love. So like that, what is the suffering for? When you're doing things out of love, what is the suffering? It's because only the perception of suffering is because of our exploitative mentality towards the material nature. Because we're trying to exploit it. Yadi dam darite jaga. Krishna says, our relationship with Prakriti is one of exploitation. That's why we suffer. Because in our attempt to exploit it, we are, how you say, slapped up by Maya. She chastises us, and then we suffer. And when you're not trying to exploit the material nature, then where is the question of suffering? That's even true for like a Gani, who also is not trying to exploit the material nature. So he doesn't experience the same type of suffering, one who's a realized Gani, as a materialist. What to speak of a devotee? A devotee has to be necessarily a Gani in the sense that his relationship towards the material nature is already neutral. And therefore, he leaves himself open for Krishna service. Understand? And unless you're neutral, you're not open for Krishna service. If you're not neutral towards the material nature, you have certain conditions by which you will do certain activities. I like this sort of service, I don't like that one. Then we're not open for Krishna service. So a real devotee, because he's ready to do anything for Krishna out of love, he's necessarily a Gani. He has that neutral vision towards the material nature. Therefore, heaven, hell, anywhere he can go for Krishna's service. So there is no suffering for him out of love for Krishna. Of course, there's another type of suffering in the category of love, but that's like esoteric. But in terms of just self-realization, there's no suffering whatsoever. Any other questions, comments, concerns? No? Okay, next verse. So Yamaraj has described what is the supreme religious principle that he had been glorifying all this time. And so are there any examples of that? Are there any examples of this? You should give an example also. So that's the next verse. What is example? Namo charana mahatmyam hari pashyata putraka ajamilopi yenaiva mrityu pasharamuchyata. My dear servants, Putraka, who are as good as my sons, just see how glorious is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Just see. The greatly sinful Ajamil chanted only to call his son, not knowing that he was chanting the Lord's holy name. Nevertheless, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, he remembered Narayana, and thus he was immediately saved from the ropes of death. Purport, there is no need to conduct research into the significance of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Understand? No need to conduct research. They do this at all these universities. They have these meditation research things that they do. There is no need to conduct research. Why not? The history of Ajamil is sufficient proof of the power of the Lord's holy name and the exalted position of a person who chants the holy name incessantly. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Naimaiva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatya Nita. In his age of Kali, no one could perform all the ritualistic ceremonies for becoming liberated. That is extremely difficult. Therefore, all the Shastras and all the Acharyas have recommended that in this age, one chant the holy name. Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So he's saying, here's an example. Putraka, my dear sons, I think this just gives expression to the broad-mindedness of Vaishnava. He's speaking to the Yamadutas, but he's calling them my dear sons, Putraka. And Prabhupada translated, you're as good as my sons. So it shows the broad-mindedness of Vaishnava. It'd be hard to say that to the Yamadutas. Anyway, so he's saying, my dear son, just see, Hare Pashati, see the glories of the holy names of Krishna. Ajamil chanted at the time of death for becoming, not even indicating the Lord, but indicating his son. Mrityu pasharam amuchata, but he was saved from the ropes of death just because of that chanting. Just see the glories. What other evidence do you require? In the modern world, we need empirical evidence for everything. So if you accept authority, what other evidence is required? If you don't accept authority, then there will never be a good enough evidence. Understand? There's two options. One option is you accept authority, then you quickly come to conclusions. Another option is you accept no authority, and there will be no end to your research, and you'll never come to any conclusion. We discussed this in Isha Upanishad. These two options are there. One option, and the other option, never come to conclusion, and your research will never get over. It will never get done. You'll only be lost in mental speculation. So here he's saying, just see, this is a good enough example. One example, Ajamil. He chanted at the time of death, indicating his son, but he was saved from the ropes of death. Just see the glories of this Bhakti Yoga Bhagavati. Just see the glories of Bhakti to Bhagavan. You were saved from death. What other example you require? What other example you require? So it's the same. Someone is having so many problems in life, you go to a devotee, and you'll say, just chant Hare Krishna. See, this example of Ajamil is there. What other example you require? You'd not be satisfied. That is our situation, of course, because Rakshasya Musuram Chaiva. Pakritam Hoinam Shrita. We're bewildered by Maya. But if you are accepting these authority, then what other example you require? Such as the glories of the holy name, Krishna. Any questions about this? Simple point, short purport. Yeah. Well, Prabhupada explained that. It wasn't like he Prabhupada's language was he didn't know he was engaged in sinful activities. He was just absorbed in the modes of nature from his lifestyle throughout his life. And he was just chanting the name of Narayana out of just affection for his son. It wasn't for bhukti, it wasn't for mukti. He was just out of affection for his son. In other words, in one sense, Ajamil lucked out. In one sense, he lucked out. He wasn't chanting because he wanted bhukti. Like as a Karmakandi practitioner we heard earlier on, then those are activities with the specific conscious of getting bhukti. And then someone becomes an ascetic, goes off to the forest with a specific conscious of becoming liberated. Ajamil wasn't doing any of that. He was just engaged in his activities, not out of desire for bhukti. It means he wasn't chanting a name for bhukti. He's obviously an enjoyer, a sense enjoyer. But he wasn't chanting a name for bhukti. He wasn't chanting the name for mukti either. He was just chanting the name because of his affection for his son. And because the name, Narayana, and the names Narayana are non-different, when he said the name of Krishna with affection, then that went to the Supreme Lord also, because the two are non-different. And so he got the benefit of that chanting in the form of the favorable glance of the Supreme Lord upon him, such as the position of the holy name of Krishna. But he never did it for bhukti or mukti. Therefore, Prabhupada, in some of his purports and translations, says he chanted purely. Because it was without a desire for bhukti or mukti. He just chanted purely. He didn't have any knowledge. So that's why I said, in one sense, it could be said he lucked out. And just out of affection for his son, that affection went to the Supreme Lord Narayana, and he got the favorable glance. And when he chanted more and more and more and more, then in that way he was developing bhakti, actually. That's what was described earlier. He was developing bhakti more and more and more by that chanting. But the chanting was offenseless, and then Prabhupada uses the language, it was pure, because it was not done for bhukti or mukti. That's interesting. It reminds me of the Apichet Sudaracha Rovers, Bhajate Mama Nanya Bhak. Sometimes we have a hard time reconciling a reality where a devotee is obviously engaged in perhaps sinful activities, and at the same time, like Ajamil, and chanting, his chanting can be accepted as pure. That's generally not the case for any of us, because we, in one sense, we have knowledge now, so finished. Now you do bhukti, it's aparat. But in this case, he kind of lucked out. But of course, that luck, when I say lucked out, that was the luck was the good fortune of meeting Vaishnava. We already heard this point. And then Vaishnava informed him to name his son Narayana. So the luck is the goodest chance to associate with devotees. But lucky. Any other questions, comments? This Yamaraj is giving an example. Give an example. Okay, then we'll do another verse then.
We hear this gradation that first you begin with the name, then the form, then the qualities, like that. These things become successively revealed to the practitioner. At what stage does that happen?
At what stages does what happen?
At what stages do these different revelations become revealed? The form, the qualities, like that, through the chanting.
In a rough way, it begins with hearing the name. And you chant the name, and that goes on through your sadhana, all the way into the stage of a sakti. In a sakti, there's spurti means a vision, some information about form. And then bhava, qualities, activities. Prema, you can enter into the activities. Bhava means you see a spurti of the form of Supreme Lord. Well, sakti, you start to get some information about, according to the Madhurya Kandambini. And at the stage of bhava, you see Lord's qualities. And prema, you can enter into his activities. No, he was at the stage of bhava, initial love of God. But Krishna wanted to bring his infant love, this is the language of Vishwanathacharya Thakur, to a state of youthfulness. So bhava is called as the premukara. The prema ankara means the seed of prema. It's called bhava. So Krishna wanted to bring that seed to a fully mature fruit of prema, high exalted love for Krishna. So then he disappeared from Narada Muni's vision for the rest of his life in order to create a situation of separation, which, you know, that intense hankering allows one to mature his love for God. It's described like, and this example is so fitting, Krishna gives it to gopis, a man who has earned some wealth, a poor man, he was a poor man and he has gained some wealth, let's say like $300,000. And then, this one, and then he gets the check for $300,000, and then he loses it. Immediately, what happens to the heart? It doesn't even have to be $300,000 for us. If it's like $20 or $40, and you're like, immediately you have to sit down, you feel a little dizzy, you know, immediately you come, lots of anxiety comes out. And your mind, rest of the day, you're thinking about that. Especially if it's a significant amount, say $100 or $300,000, if you lose it, you'll be in the park chanting Hare Krishna like anything. Out of feelings of separation from the money, of course. So this example, Krishna's giving this example. Krishna's only giving this example. That's a very fitting example because we have experience. I remember one time I had $100 in my some pants pocket for the airport. We used to wear these nice pants. I put $100 there one time. I forgot it was in. I washed it. And I washed it, the money spreads out all over the machine. I did that several times. And at the time, we had a person in our temple who was kind of like a klepto, you know. He kind of like had a problem with stealing. He got caught several times. So then when I realized that I left $100 in the, I ran into the bathroom, and he was coming out of the bathroom, hadn't opened the thing and so on. Then when I went in there, the Lakshmi was gone, you know. And he wasn't a person that you would challenge either, because he had a temper issue. So my heart was devastated. I just had to sit down. I was dizzy. It's like, someone give me some water. Like this. Krishna gives fitting example. That's a fitting example. So similarly, in Narada Muni's case, he had initial love for God, but Krishna creates a situation of separation to make the hankering very deep. That is very important for, you can call it like a bhava sadhana. Right? Because the stage of bhava is not sadhana anymore, but it's not complete perfection. So sadhana continues even in the stage of bhava. This is described in Nectar Devotion. And so this bhava sadhana, this element becomes very important, just, you know, increasingly hankering after Krishna. So that is different. For us, it's chanting Hare Krishna. Carry on, you know, get the anarthas out, come to nishtha, get a relishment for chanting. Relishment means the mind has to be free from the pokings of passionate ignorance. Kamalu badash chaye. Like this. Yes.
Oh, We were discussing the 14 stages of devotional service earlier. Out
Yes.
of those, the 13th stage, I think, was darshanam.
Yes.
So that's happening after everything else has already happened, and then it was like Krishna's sweetness is experienced. So
Yes.
like 13 and 14. So that was explained that sweetness experienced in the by actually entering into the pastimes, but before that there's darshanam. So that's the final stage. So I was just trying to understand. You said at asakti you start to perceive.
As asakti, you can get information
Okay.
about, yeah, your form of Krishna. This according to the scheme given in the Madhurya Kandambini. And bhava yoga is sporti. Sporti means a vision of the Lord within the heart. And then prema, you see the Lord face to face. Bhava, you see in the heart. Prema, eye to eye. Prabhupada says, like, just as I am seeing you can see the Supreme Lord at this stage of prema. Like that distinction. Any other questions? So this is an example. Then the next verse, Yamaraj wants to glorify Namabhas, to glorify Nama. Understand? Kaimutyanaya. We already described that. So, etavatalam Sankirtana bhagavato gunakarma namnam. Vikrushya putram aghavan yadajami lopi. Narayaneti mriyamana niyaya muktem. Translation. Therefore, it should be understood that one is easily relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting of his qualities and activities. This is the only process recommended for relief from sinful reactions. Even if one chants the holy name of the Lord with improper pronunciation, he will achieve relief from material bondage if he chants without offenses. Ajamil, for example, was extremely sinful, Agavan. But while dying, he merely chanted the holy name. And although calling his son, he achieved complete liberation because he remembered the name of Narayana. Purport. In the assembly of Raghunath Das Goswami's father, Haridas Thakur, confirmed that simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is liberated, even if he does not chant completely inoffensively. Smarta Brahmanas and Mayavadis do not believe that one can achieve liberation in this way, but the truth of Haridas Thakur's statement is supported by many quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam. In his commentary on this verse, for example, Sridhar Swami gives the following quotation: Sayam pratha grinam bhaktya dukha grama vimuchate. Quote, if one always chants the holy name of the Lord with great devotion in the evening and in the morning, one can become free from all material miseries. End quote. Another quotation confirms that one can achieve liberation if one hears the holy name of the Lord constantly, every day with great respect. Anudinam idam adarena shrinvan. So lucky for the people downtown. Another quotation says, Shravanam kirtanam dhyanam harer adbhuta karmanam janma karma gunanam cha tadarte akila cheshtitam. Quote, one should always chant and hear about the extraordinarily wonderful activities of the Lord. One should meditate upon these activities, and one should endeavor to please the Lord. End quote. 11th canto, chapter 3, verse 27. Sridhar Swami also quotes from the Puranas, Papakshayascha Bhavati, Smaratam Tamaharanisham. Quote, one can become free from all sinful reactions simply by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord day and night, Aharanisham. Furthermore, he quotes from the Bhagavatam, coming up, Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnur Jagamangalam Aham Hasam Mahatam Api Kauravya Vidyakantika Nishkritam. All these quotations prove, well, probably in translation, I guess he says it's coming up, so you can read it. All these quotations prove that one who constantly engages in chanting and hearing of the holy activities, name, fame, and form of the Lord is liberated. As stated wonderfully in this verse, Eta Vatalam Aganir Haranaya Pum Sam, simply by uttering the name of the Lord, one is free from all sinful reactions. Okay, this is just a bullet point before I... All of these, this whole paragraph that we just read is just Srila Prabhupada saying that chanting Namabhas is sufficient to get free from sinful reactions and gain liberation. Or to speak of higher things, it's sufficient just for this thing alone. So that's what that's Prabhupada's point in all those verses we just heard. Just take note of that. I'm going to continue reading it. And just take note of that. That's just what we heard about. Because it's a long purport, so you can get easily lost. So that's what we heard about just now. Chanting Namabhas is sufficient for becoming free from sins. Understand? That's basically what we heard. The word alum, which is used in this verse, indicates that simply uttering the holy name of the Lord is sufficient. It is sufficient. This word is used with different imports. As stated in the Amara Kosha, the most authorized dictionary in the Sanskrit language, Alam Bhushana Pariyapti Shakti Varana Vachakam. The word Alam is used to mean ornament, sufficiency, power, and restraint. Here the word Alam is used to indicate that there is no need of any other process, for the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is sufficient. Even if one chants imperfectly, one becomes free from all sinful reactions by chanting. Allah is sufficient. This power of chanting the holy name was proved by the liberation of Ajamil. When Ajamil chanted the holy name of Narayana, he did not precisely remember the Supreme Lord. Instead, he remembered his own son. At the time of death, Ajamil certainly was not very clean. Indeed, he was famous as a great sinner. Furthermore, once physiological conditions is completely disturbed at the time of death, and in such an awkward condition, it would certainly have been very difficult for Ajamil to have chanted clearly. Nevertheless, Ajamil achieved liberation simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Therefore, what is to be said of those who are not sinful like Ajamil? It is to be concluded that with a strong vow, one should chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. For thus one will certainly be delivered from the clutches of Maya by the grace of Krishna. So he's saying, last two paragraphs we just read, chanting of the holy name, even a semblance of the holy name, indicating something else. Like Ajamil's chanting was called as Sanketa Namabhas, we already heard this. Sanketana Namas means the name of Krishna indicating someone else. But by that chanting, he became relieved. So what to speak of if you chant indicating Krishna, and not just at the time of death like Ajamil, but during your life you chant. Understand? So Prabhupada says here, therefore, what is to be said of those who are not sinful like Ajamil? It is to be concluded that with a strong vow. Prabhupada is saying that. From this understanding, this conclusion should come. Understand? From this understanding, it should not be concluded, let me live like Ajamil and somehow chant the holy name of Krishna. That's not the conclusion. From this, we should conclude that with a strong vow, we should chant Hare Krishna, understand? By hearing the effect of a semblance of a practice, not even a real practice, but a semblance, the conclusion is we should practice for real, understand? This is called as Kaimutyanaya. We already discussed this. Understand these points? Understand? Understand? You don't understand. Okay, we're coming up. Next little paragraph here. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is recommended even for persons who commit offenses, because if they continue chanting, they will gradually chant offenselessly. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra without offenses, one increases his love for Krishna. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prema Pum Artha Mahan, one's main concern should be to increase one's attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to increase one's love for Him. Yes. In this regard, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. First verse. Evam dharmai manushanam udha vatmani vedinam mayi sanjayate bhakti konyo Konyoto Shavashishite. Sorry, a little tongue twist for me. Quote, my dear Uddhava, the supreme religious system for human society is that by which one awakens his dormant love for me. End quote. Commenting on this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the word bhakti by saying, pramai vokta, ka anya artha asya. In the presence of bhakti, what is the necessity of liberation? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also quotes this verse from the Padma Purana, nama parada yuktanam namanyeva harantyagham avishranti prayuktani tanyevarta karani cha. Even if in the beginning one chants the Hare Krishna mantra with offenses, one will become free from such offenses by chanting again and again. Papakshayash bhavati smaratam tamaharnisham. One becomes free from all sinful reactions if one chants day and night. Following the recommendation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who quoted the following verse, Harir Nama Harir Nama Harir Nama Eva Kevalam Kalo Nasdeva 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 Gatir Anyata. Quote, in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. End quote. If the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement strictly follow this recommendation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their position will always be secure. So the last section was about what if you were chanting with offenses, then what is the result of such a person? That was the last section. Okay, those are bullet points. Now let's go back. The first point is that it's saying here, Etavata alam aga neharanaya pumsam sankirtana bhagavato gunakarmana. So by sankirtan of Bhagavan, gunakarma namna, by sankirtan of Krishna's qualities, of his activities and of his name, then aga neharanaya, you can become free from sinful activities. Understand? Understanding that point. Etavata alam, this is sufficient for that. It's not sufficient for getting pure love of God. That's not sufficient for getting pure love of God. But for becoming free from sinful activities, it is sufficient to just chant the names of Krishna's names, his activities, his gunas, and sankirtan. That is sufficient to become purified of sins, of anarthas. Understand that point? And so, in the beginning, it says here, Vikrusha putram agavan yada ja milopi. Even if you are agavan, you know, remember what agavan means? You don't remember what agavan means, I told. Sinful. Remember, bhagavan means one who is filled with bhaga, opulences. Shraddhavan means one who is filled with shraddha. Ganavan means one who is filled with gan. Krishna says, ganavan man prapadyate. So agavan means one who is filled with sins. His whole life is full of sins. All consciousness. Which one are you? Shraddhavan? Bhagavan? Agavan? Ganavan? Which one are you? Which one? Which one? No, agavans. So even if you are agavan, vikrusha. Vikrusha here says, Prabhupada translated as improper pronunciation. Even if you're chanting improperly, indicating something else, that chanting is sufficient to become free from all sinful activities. Alam, sufficient. You need not take shelter of any other process. So from that understanding, Prabhupada says the conclusion is we should, with a strong vow, take to chanting Hare Krishna seriously. Understand? That was the point that you said you weren't getting. Say what? Yes, by Kaimutya Naya. That's the point. Remember this Kaimutya Naya point? The logic of how much more so. Just like, for example, if you invest $100 into something and you get $100,000 back, then you think that is sufficient. If you think like that, generally, if you're a materialistic person, if you invest $100 into something and you get $100,000 back, you will think that is enough. I am finished. You will think, if by investing 100, I got so much back. What if I invest $100,000? How much more I will get back? You understand? This is called Kaimutya Naya, the logic of how much more so. If by doing this little bit, I got all of this benefit, then what if I did a lot more? Then how much benefit I will get? Understand? He was telling us last night how he wanted to make a lot of money. So the example should be very clear. Very clear for you. If I put in this much, I get this much back. Then what if I put in that much? Then how much more I will get back, isn't it? So similarly, if by chanting this little namabas, I can get all this benefit, then what if I chant seriously? Then what benefit I will get? If here, Narayaneti Mrayamana Idaya Muktam, by chanting at the time of death, he was able to get mukti. By a semblance only. So what if I chant seriously? Then maybe there's something more than mukti. Something better. So Prabhupada is saying by understanding that this is sufficient just for that little bit, then the conclusion should be you should do it very seriously. Then how much more you can get? That is natural consciousness. You should naturally think in this way. It's called the logic of how much more so. Kaimutina. You understand that point? Understand that point? Then the last paragraph is mentioning that even if you chant with offenses, now when you chant with offenses, the reactions to your sinful activities are nullified slowly. If you chant without offenses, then very quickly sins are nullified. Such was the case with Ajamil. Understand? When he chanted one namabas, from the very first time he chanted his son's name, Narayana, immediately the slate was wiped clean because there was no offense in his chanting. But if you chant with offenses, sins are eradicated slowly, not immediately. Therefore, it may be seen in the life of such an offensive chanter that so many reactions may still be happening to him due to his offenses. Actually, it's due to his sinful activities that these reactions are coming. And because he chants with offenses, those sinful activities are not being vanquished quickly. Slowly, they're being vanquished. So then the last paragraph is, what if you chant with offenses? So it's saying here, you should go on chanting. Because by gradually chanting, even with offenses, you will come to the state of chanting offenselessly. I met many people in the beginning of my Christian consciousness. Many people I met like this on the street and so on. When I would go to these Rath Yatra festivals, because in the very first 2 years of my Christian consciousness, I used to go to a lot of Rath Yatra festivals. And I met many people who said they had stopped chanting because they chant with offenses. You know, and those offenses are heavy. Some of them are like impossible to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and to maintain material attachments of I am I, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. Who here is chanting without thinking of I am I? Anyone here chanting without thinking of I am I? I remember when I first read that, I'm like, what is the hope? Anyone here chanting without thinking of I am I? The aparad is there, some aparad is going on. So this person said, I gave up chanting also. Because I saw the offenses, I said, what is the hope of chanting properly? So he said, I gave up chanting also. I met many people like this. But here it's saying, even if you chant with offense, by that constant chanting, gradually you will become offenseless chanter. So one should go on chanting, and then when your offenses are, what is that? Nasha prayeshu abhijeshu. When most of the offenses are nullified, then your chanting will develop love. It will develop your love for Krishna. So in all cases, one should chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Day and night, Prabhupada is quoting Lord Chaitanya again. Day and night, constantly, there is no other way for humanity, especially in this age of Kali. One should go on doing this chanting. Otherwise, you cannot develop your love for Krishna without this chanting. You cannot get rid of your sinful activities without this chanting. So one should go on doing this chanting. So Ajamil is glorifying that. He gave example of Ajamil, and he's glorifying what is the power of this chanting of the holy name. And why is the holy name so powerful? Huh? Because it's Krishna. Because it's Krishna. So it's having so much power. Atonement has limited power. Why does atonement have limited power? Huh? Yes. It cannot remove ignorance. Why cannot it remove ignorance? That's what I already said. That's what it means. That's saying the same thing. Because they're not Krishna. Only Krishna has the power to remove our ignorance. Luke wants to say something. So one should go and chant this holy name of Krishna because it is Krishna. It has so much power. Yamaraj is glorified this.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much. Based on the final concluding paragraph of Srila Prabhupada, his purport, would it be a fair extrapolation, reasonable, to say that any personal or communal insecurities are due to a deficiency in chanting Hare Krishna.
Any personal or communal? Can you elaborate on that?
Well, yeah. So Prabhupada, he says, you know, if, let's see, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. If the members of the Krishna consciousness movement strictly follow this recommendation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their position will always be secure. So, is it a fair extrapolation to say whatever insecurities the members or the movement are experiencing can be attributed to not strictly following the recommendation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Or let's say not strictly enough following the recommendation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
I can see how one may extrapolate that, as you yourself are doing. But I think I might say it in a broader way. The insecurity is due to lack of sufficient shelter taking in Krishna and Krishna Nam. And we're not surrendered to it. So fear is due to the lack of not being surrendered. And therefore not being surrendered, not feeling the presence of Krishna, not having the confidence in Krishna's protection, that he will maintain me, that he's my guardian, these various angas. So because of not being a shared nagata, insecurities come up. I would probably express it in that sort of way. It could be extrapolated, but the point is that one is not surrendered, so one feels insecure.
It seems, to say it, to be surrendered means to chant Hare Krishna.
Yes,
if you surrender to the name, then you demonstrate that by chanting.
Yes, but of course, many persons have chanted, they have fallen away. So surrender is, of course, a very deep thing. It has to be studied. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has created 32 songs. In other words, someone can be chanting 192 rounds, as was the case in Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta's time. And he travels through Vrindavan and says, I didn't meet even one Vaishnava. And his disciples were, what do you mean you didn't meet one Vaishnava? So many Vaishnavas were there. They were chanting 192 rounds, hardly eating anything, not sleeping also, simply chanting throughout the day and night. And Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta leaves lamenting, said, I did not even meet one Vaishnava in my travels in Vrindavan. So obviously Sharanagati has, there's many aspects of it that needs to be understood by, especially sadhakas, for which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has composed 32 songs. It has to be studied deeply. What is Sharanagati? It is assumed that when the practice of all the various angas of bhakti, the Sharanagati is already included. As I've often mentioned, Sharanagati is the life air of bhakti. So just as our body cannot move without any prana, so bhakti doesn't do anything really without any Sharanagati. So Sharanagati is so essential, but it's also a very deep thing. What is it really going on in the consciousness when chanting or when hearing or remembering Krishna's pastimes? It is more than just the activity itself, although the activity is meant to generate that spirit more and more, but the activity done without someone again isn't going to help us so much. Of course, it is sufficient for removing lots of sins and so on, but it's not sufficient for giving us pure bhakti to Krishna. For that, you need the help of someone again also. And for that reason, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta says that the hearing is the swarup shakti of Harinam. It should be combined. And the reason he said that is because the interpretation of this very verse, Harinama, Harinama, Eva Kevalam, was that just going chanting. And he noticed that no one was hearing anything. They thought, no need to hear anything, just chant on the strength of this particular verse. So because of observing that in the atmosphere, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta made this statement that hearing Harikatha is the swarup shakti of Harinam. As a critique of what was going on account of the wrong understanding of this particular verse, at least in the eyes of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, who we follow in the Saraswati Parampara. So, like I said, I would still say, I would probably broaden it by saying it's just a lack of Sharanagati, which is a little bit deeper than perhaps many of us give enough credit to, what it really means to be a Sharanagata. A lot of events are going on now, even in our own ISKCON, these, I call it celebrity culture, where, you know, there's a lot of huge events, huge gatherings, not saying names, but people come together for chanting the holy name, which of course is wonderful. It's a wonderful way to bring Vaishnavas together, especially parties that are kind of opposed to each other. They all come to these events. So that's a pretty good idea, to kind of reconcile differences through chanting the holy name of Krishna. But the reality is that persons don't sufficiently hear Hari Katha. And therefore, they don't evolve their Sharanagati, because to really do that, you need the Sambandhagyan. You need the specifics of what it means to be a Sharanagata. Our acharyas have gone through great lengths to provide such information to us so that we could have that support, that knowledge which we require for really chanting with surrender and hearing with surrender and so on. But we often don't take advantage of it. There's no time. You know. So therefore, the essence is just chanting, so I've already understood that essence. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, particularly, Srila Prabhupada also in his purports, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in no unclear terms has a lot of criticisms to say about that. So like I said, any insecurity experienced by any of the members of the Krishna consciousness is certainly due to lack of surrender. Or let's say it in a more positive way, we're developing our surrender. Until our surrender is fully mature, insecurities come up. So we're not surrendering to the name. We're not surrendering to the form of Krishna. We have doubts about that. We're not surrendering to the Bhagavatam. We're not surrendering to devotees. So because of lack of surrender, we feel insecure. And that will continue until our surrender becomes mature. Sharanagati is our prospect in transcendence. So without its development, we won't get much from our chanting and so on. You can go and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's words, it's not just yelling. I forget how he puts it exactly. He said, but the loud screaming together in Sankirtan is just Maya Kirtan. When it's not done with a certain consciousness, which he describes earlier on in the essay. I think it's in the essay called, Chanters of the Kirtan of Hari, or another one that I'll post it. So he makes a very clear distinction that just gathering together and loudly screaming is not Sankirtan, you know, in no ambiguous terms. And of course, so we have to take all the points together and come to an understanding. And this is what I've understood, so I'm sharing that. Yes, you want to say something?
Clarification or follow-up question. So, just a clarification or follow-up question, you can say. So, this verse is saying that chanting of the holy names, even with offenses and with improper chanting, will purify one and bring him to the stage of offenseless chanting. And you were expressing the emphasis Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur put on hearing Harikatha. So is it that chanting will bring one to that stage, but hearing will make it faster? Or
well, certainly hearing could make the process a lot quicker. Just like, for example, if you have to teach yourself math, or you learn from a teacher, which process will go faster? If you have to teach yourself, it will take a long time. If you learn from a teacher, it goes quickly. Similarly, if you have to practice bhakti yoga yourself, then progress will be extremely slow, if at all. And if you learn from bona fide Vaishnava, more experienced Vaishnava, sadhu guru, then it goes much quicker. Certainly, that is true.
So it's not that without hearing, that purification will not happen. I mean, the holy name has that.
Of course, we heard that earlier also. Even if someone has no knowledge and he chants Hare Krishna, it will have its effect. You know, its effect of purifying one. It certainly purifies one. Especially if done without offense, as in the case of Ajamil, purification can happen very rapidly. But in order to develop purity, you need someone to get. So in that sense, Ajamil did hear the conversation between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. And there's a verse in Bhagavatam that specifically expresses how he, after hearing from the Vishnudutas, he can understand the difference between Trigunya Dharma and Nishtrigunya Dharma, you know, religious principles within the modes and religious principles outside of the modes. And then with that knowledge, he woke up, he had a second chance, and then he began performing sadhana bhakti with that knowledge that he had received from that discussion with the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas. And then he perfected his bhakti, which was present there already because of his Namabhash Chani. But then it was done with knowledge, and it led to his final Vaikuntha liberation. So in that sense, the same kind of message is found right here in Ajamil's pastime. It is required, and we already discussed also one purport Vishnachavari Thakur was saying how someone may say, Ajamil didn't have guru, so we don't need guru. We don't need to hear from guru and all these things. We'll just chant the holy name. But he says, as a person shall think in that way, that itself is an offense. It's the third offense of the holy name, that I don't need guru. Or you shall think, what is the use of guru? I will not take guru. That itself is an offense. And therefore, because you're chanting the holy name, you're still being purified, but you're committing offense, so you have to take birth again, and so that in that life you will accept Guru, and then progress. So knowledge is required. So when it says etavata alam, so etavata alam, this is sufficient. I clarify, sufficient for what though? Not sufficient for getting prema, but sufficient for purifying yourself of anartas. But if you shall chant with offenses, those anarthas go away slowly. So that's another problem that I already mentioned that earlier. If you chant with offenses, then the anarthas are dissipated slowly. If you chant offensively, they dissipate it fast. So by the very fact that we see that our life of anarthas isn't going, then we deduce that some offense is being made. So it's taking some time. And that's probably due to lack of knowledge. So therefore, we have Bhagavatam class, so that knowledge will come. Otherwise, you commit aparadha.
A small thing. I was just thinking that you kind of touched upon this by accepting a guru from hearing. So I was thinking, if you're just relying on chanting and achieving the final goal just by that process, is that like an ascending process or that consciousness? Is that?
Yes, you can say that is the consciousness of the ascending method. If I shall just chant and I'll achieve the goal of life by chanting, is that, could that be likened to the ascending process towards approaching God? And the answer is yes. This is a descending process. Do not take support from Krishna and his non-different manifestations in the form of bhakta, bhagavatam, etc. Yes, it can be likened to that. Certainly. Any other points of clarification, questions, concerns? Good? Okay. You want to say something? Oh, he was... All right. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.